SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201. Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevevick.com. And midweek, we are underway at Ocala. Day one of the spring sale. Closely watched and solid enough. Kind of a wading into action, you know, kind of dipping the toes in. Numbers, specifically the average, was about the same as last year. 90-something, 91,000, 92,000, 1% difference. And that feels like an encouraging number. We're going to get a on-the-spot report for a little bit after the first break. Joe Applebaum off the hook. His pin-hooking operation seemed like he had a very solid day. There were no grand slams, at least for his outfit, but number of six-figure sellers, and want to get Joe's, you know, temperature taking. Literally, because nobody can go into a building without getting your temperature taken. The top seller, late in the session, actually, out of that supplemental catalog, which actually is right down here at my feet, the two big catalogs and the supplemental catalog. And as you heard on Monday, Tom Ventura explaining that rather than, you know, selling the whole supplement catalog, about 60, 70 head, at the end of each session, they're selling a handful of them, you know, a couple of dozen each day. And the first big seller, and easily the session topper, $750,000. And Ben McElroy signed the ticket for Amon Shah. This is a colt that was among the fastest on the Breeze front, 9-4. And that was a good ending to the day. There were a lot of, you know, 200,000 to 400,000, probably about 15 of those. And when it came to the, you know, the headliners and some of the, you know, the notable storylines so far, you know, the big ticket or the big stallion names, the fancy pages, they don't really need a lot of help. All they got to do is breeze pretty well, and they're going to get, you know, a lot of attention. And so a couple of Into Mischiefs, two Into Mischief fillies helped boost things along. The top filly seller, an Into Mischief out of Midnight Visit, bought by Spendthrift, consigned by Woodford. That was hip 129, breezed in 21 flat. That was your most expensive filly. And, you know, one of the things I love to do, and I'm sure we'll talk, you know, over the next couple of days with maybe with Jessica Martini and Brian DiDernardo and Nicole Russo, who's following it from home. One of the fun things is to monitor the, you know, the new stallions. This is one of the most, I think, intriguing parts of the two-year-old sale season. And, you know, yesterday I went through that list of a couple of dozen, and you know, it's not fair to make any conclusions after the first day, but a couple of things caught my eye immediately. And for those that have been listening to the sales chatter on this show, you know, from way back, when Glennie Kane Oakford, the grand dam of sales coverage, the mistress of the hounds, with Glennie, and I've done it subsequently with Sid. One thing that I always find about new sires that can be a bellwether is sell-through. And, you know, meaning not necessarily, you know, knocking down enormous prices and in a big ticket sell. However, if a stallion's got, you know, 8 horses on a day and 1 RNAs and 7 sell, you know, or 5 out of 5 sell, that, you know, at decent prices, at solid multiples of the stallion's stud fee, that's a good indicator that, you know, that buyers are impressed with the physical and, you know, with what they're seeing. And the horse yesterday, anyway, and a lot of this is a function of how many just happened alphabetically to be paired up with certain mares, because it's all done, you know, the alphabetical portion of the mare's name determines where they are in the catalog. So it's very random. But Brody's Cause, and I'm going to bring this up with Sid later, had, I think, 5 or 6 sellers, and I'll quickly pull up. I'm just curious. Here we go. Brody's Cause. Looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 went through yesterday, and everyone sold. Not all big numbers. I mean, the lowest was 6,000, then 18,000, 35,000, 42,000, 65,000. And to me, that's always notable that, you know, no RNAs, you know, which means, you know, they have a, you know, Spendthrift's got a reasonable, you know, they've got, you know, there's reasonable expectations from the, you know, from the sellers. He stands for 7,500. And so to me, that's one of the things I like to see. Ironicus sold 2 yesterday, including 1, I think, for a fairly nice number, I noticed. There's another, you know, below the radar first crop. Frosted, who, you know, it was expected to do well. Frosted looked like he had a good day. Air Force Blue, we should mention. Air Force Blue, interesting. Air Force Blue had the $400,000 colt that Kieran Dunn, Wavertree, put through, and Justin Cassie paid $400,000 for Coolmore for this Air Force Blue colt. And there's quite a few Air Force Blues that are in this sale. And, you know, Munnings, Tappet, Into Mischief, Candy Ride, Blame. Yeah, the big names pulled their weight, to say the least. You know, of those somewhat international stallions that are just not going to be as familiar, you know, that, you know, stallions who the majority of their career came, you know, outside North America, that's always interesting too. And of course, Air Force Blue, a war front, and Coolmore obviously supporting him, but still, the 400,000 is, that's a big number. So, Another one is Vancouver, actually, and Vancouver. A couple, I think, yesterday, and a couple that are still to come. Vancouver caught my eye. In fact, saw a nice looking filly by Vancouver that taken a little interest in. So we'll get more from Joe and we'll Joe Applebaum in about 10 minutes, as well as when Sid joins us, we'll get some further thoughts from him. Just looking down, not this time, taking those on-track successes and translating them into, you know, there was a $200,000, a $75,000, and a $10,000, so three. You know, I'm going to bring up with Sid, Twirling Candy, three six-figure sellers. Yesterday, 200, 180, and 175. So a lot, you know, a lot to absorb, and off to a good start. And we'll get more details from Joe in just a few minutes. The racing action and some contest conversation to come today as well. One of the NHC qualifiers, Lauren Weiss. And Lauren, part of the Ray Arsenault and company, the traveling circus from Canada. And Lauren, a veteran contest success, and he is going to join us later this morning. We'll talk to Lauren and his son, actually, Andrew, who is days away from turning 21 and being able to join the tour. And Andrew has been at Lauren's side for years, whether it's down at Gulfstream during the winters or at Woodbine during the, you know, during the season there. So we'll talk to both Lauren and Andrew about the success over the weekend. Got quite a few stories to tell, including, you know, I sent out after the Saturday free contest, I sent out those three winners, what looked like at the time as unofficial winners, but they did go official soon enough, and actually tried to reach out to them, and I would like to get at least one of them, Alan Rose, Wolfgang Wissig, and David Sullivan. They bested about 1,400 others in the free contest to punch their tickets. And Wolfgang Wissig, as it happens, that's a name I've seen quite a bit on contest leaderboards. But I'd love to get, you know, a visit in with one or more of them. So I'll see if they I sent them an email last night. I'll give you a quick, before we go, I'll give you a quick summary of all the contest winners from the weekend. Last Wednesday, Michael Jordan, who's being profiled, it seems, no, I'm just kidding, different Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan got his second seat last Wednesday, and then on Friday, Lorne and Eric Gilada. Eric got his second seat, so he's done. He's ready. Amy Brantley qualifying, too. Those three on Friday. I told you the free contests. How about Evan Tromer? The horse tourneys, the $500 Sunday contest. Evan scores. And then also on the Sunday horse player action, Mike Capel and Karen Richards. So there's your weekend qualifiers, and we'll talk to Lauren and maybe more. Lauren and Andrew Weiss, and perhaps more. Seth Merrill later, of course, on a Wednesday. We'll see what action Seth's got in mind. There's Gulfstream and that we're going to talk about. Mike Welch is going to join us at 11. You've got that crazy midweek showdown that kind of, you know, popped up. Unbelievable. Sol Volante, Ete Indian, and Chivalry. A $55,000 feature. Allow it. Crazy. So we'll talk to Mike about it and see what his thoughts were. Sid Fernando, of course, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. I actually exchanged some conversation with John Secura. John's not down at the sale. He is busy, you know, the new farm, the new Hill and Dale, and looking forward to getting details. He was meeting with the builders and all this. So a couple of race notes, too, before we go to the break. Couldn't get anything out of the Lone Star, the Asmussen runners yesterday. The gun runner sibling, Fortune Ticket, ran kind of evenly and got beat 3-4 lengths. Was only third choice. Favorite got beat as well, though, the Brett Calhoun favorite, Bandit Swanson, at even money. Midnight Patriot, 4-1 for Scott Gellner. And then in that seventh allowance, Vice Versa stopped like a cheap watch. Yeesh. And clunked home last. That was bad. There was a takedown in this race, too, as it happens. But Broberg got put up. End Zone Athletics, like they don't win enough races. and Mike Sisk got taken down in Deodoro. That was in that co-feature. Let's take a break. We'll come back to racing notes, but first, we'll go to Ocala. Joe Applebaum next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Pletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Get on, Robin, Ellen, or Alan. You're grown, okay.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes into hour one on this Wednesday, and one day into the 4 days of the Ocala Spring Sale, and obviously very important, quite delayed. The consigners, the breeders, the pinhookers, all biding their time and keeping their horses. We talked yesterday and Monday with Tom Ventura about, in some cases, it may have benefited some horses that get to grow a little bit more, may have had some issues, that were holding them back during preparation time, back in the winter. Certainly important for Off the Hook, Joe Applebaum, who joins us now. Joe, good morning.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Excellent. And, you actually cleared the deck pretty good. Day one, you got rid of probably half the consignment.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't say this with hyperbole. I consider it one of our great professional achievements that we sold 10 of our 11 horses that we had in yesterday. And I got one more filly, this is Constitution, hip 167. We'll get a free plug-in for ourselves here. Sure. New York bred filly sitting around here. Come on out. Give us a call. We're here to make a deal and get her sold. So I think in this sort of environment, in this sort of sales environment, it's incredibly important to move your stock on.
Joe, we'll talk about the specifics and also about the next 3 days where you've got another 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, another 11 to sell.
Yeah.
So it really was half the consignment. Yeah.
Yeah.
But let's give us a feel, Joe. What was your last week with the Breeze Show? I know there was some weather issues, but what was the traffic? What was the sense that the atmosphere like?
So we actually did a little analysis of past years, Steve, and we found that the traffic was off about 22% from the last couple of years. What we found is that's mainly principal. So all the agents are here. Many, if not all, of the trainers you'd expect to see are here, right? But we're seeing a drop-off in principals, the owners themselves. So we've seen that. That's not surprising, right? There's travel restrictions in place. People might be hesitant to go on the road these days. It's not surprising. I know OBS has done a fantastic job just in a number of weeks of ramping up their online systems, and I know they were flooded with online bidding applications yesterday. So we hope that mitigates some of the issues. But we can all dream we're in a different world, but that's the world we're in today.
Did you hear how many, and I'll reach out to Tom or Todd to get a number. Do we know what percentage of sale yesterday came on the online side?
I have no idea, but I will tell you my personal anecdote is the last horse we sold, Hip 303, we were searching around. Usually after a horse sells, I like to go to the buyer, thank them, let them know any information about the horse they need, see what needs to be done until they pick the horse up, and we couldn't find the buyer. We were searching and searching all over, and it turns out the buyer was on the internet. So I have no idea or actual numbers, but I know that horse was sold via internet. So.
Well, I was watching and didn't do any bidding, but was certainly it seemed like things were fairly seamless. I know there was one horse that came had to come back through the ring to be sold.
We have that for an occasion, but
anytime.
We got to sign up for an account, Steve. Just like getting an Ira Betts account, we need to sign you up for OBS. We need to get you an OBS bidding account.
We've got credit. We bought two last year, and in fact, we had a lot of fun on the air because we bid. Tom was on the phone bidding for us, and we did it over the radio, and people really enjoyed it.
That's great.
I got Siaka. Siaka's wandering around there. All right,
Siaka's not enjoying the heat so much right now. He looks a little washed out, but he's doing his work. He's still, we know he's diligent. He's a grinder.
Yes, yeah, that. He gets a little. He does get a little sweet. You know, you're right. He might wash out a little. I love it. Talk a little bit too, Joe, about you know what you saw from your consignment, and you know you had two six-figure sellers: the $130,000 Palace Malice and the $195,000 Broken Vow. I see Bob Peterson bought that one, and that's Gullo, right? That's Gary Gullo.
Yeah. Yeah, Gary was here. Those were, look, there's really few surprises at that level. Those horses were our two most popular. They were vetted a bunch of times. They not only breeze well, but they're good physicals. You know, I don't want to sound like everyone else. They jump through all the hoops, et cetera, et cetera. I think the difference from the last couple years is that in the last year or two, those horses like that, like sometimes the bidding would get out of control, right? Which is good when you're a seller, not so good if you're buying. This year, people are there, they're buying, but there doesn't seem to be quite as much of that mania. And, you know, for me, and I say this all the time, is the most important thing for me is that the horses do well, because we're in this game for a long time, and we want to have a good reputation as selling champions. And when I see horses like that go to good hands, I get very excited.
Well, and that, you know, that's a big part of it, no doubt. And same thing, you know, the breeders on the back end of the ones that, you know, that you may have bought as yearlings and even as weanlings, you know, they want, they're hopeful that the horses are going to end up, you know, somewhere. And of course, there's regional, some of the regional breeding programs where there's going to be, you know, breeder awards involved. And so, you know, they're hoping, you know, that's a big part.
We're all hope. It's a game of hope, right?
Exactly.
I think the reality is that horses that have interest, when you go up to the ring, the interest is there. The other ones, you got to hustle for. It's there's not a lot of excess demand. But the horses that you think you're going to do well with, you're probably going to do well with. So that's kind of where we were with those two horses. That was. You know, it's good to see. It's good to see when your opinions are validated.
Well, exactly. And on that front, too, I'm curious, Joe, talk a little bit about how the time either hurt or benefited your consignment, the extra time.
Well, that's a great question. We shut it down. I wouldn't say shut it down. Very early on, I told my partner, I was like, we got to back off right away. There's no way we're having an April sale. Even though they didn't make an announcement for a couple weeks, it was clear the handwriting was on the wall, right? So we backed off everyone. I think it helped us to some extent that always a little more time helps you, right? You get the horses a little more fit. You get them ready. Unfortunately, a couple of horses didn't make it to the sale. We're going to have to lay them off. And you'll be seeing them in the off-the-hook blue and green come September or October, hopefully, right? But they sustained some small injuries or something because the timing was a little off. And, you know, the way we do things in horse racing is so much about conditioning the animal. I don't mean just putting miles in them. I mean from a psychological standpoint, like what's expected of them. There's a lot of routine, which the animals find comfort in. And, you know, when the routine gets thrown off, there's some difficulty there. So we had a couple of New York breds that got some nagging injuries. But, you know, you'll see them in the fall. We'll see how we do.
And that was going to be part of the follow-up question, too. I mean, when I look and see you had 11. It's pretty funny. Everything's 11 here.
You had 11 outs. Table, right?
Exactly. Wearing your protective plastic casement. So all 11, I mean, will some go back to will some breeders get back involved? Will you put together some partnerships? Are they all, you know, destined to race?
No, my partnerships, no, they're not all destined to race. A couple of those will get recast into the July sale here, which was the old June sale. But the New York breds, you know, I have my partners, my long-standing partners. We're not really apt to do partnerships. It's not really... The partnerships are two or three close friends, not 100 people. It's not in our makeup, really, for that. But you'll see some of them debut likely in the fall in New York, especially the New York breds. A couple will be recast into the July sale. And a couple, the owners, you know, will race them themselves.
Well, the mix and match, and I'm just looking through actually at you know, the buyers, and you know, the whole consignment's interesting in a lot of ways, Joe, because obviously it's a mix and match. Some of it is, you know, purchases that come from established stallions. Then, of course, you know, when you talk about the New York breds and being a New York based operation, you know, you also, you know, have got a number of those types. You got a Leoban colt that actually was withdrawn, a Vancouver colt actually that came out as well. But
no, those are all ones. You know. Yeah, sorry to interrupt. Like the Leoban, I don't know, I'm sure who knows how to pronounce that name. The Vancouver, we had the brother of City Man that we had to withdraw. Those are all horses you'll see in the fall. We've had a little business model the last couple of years of buying New York bred weanlings, not actually buying yearlings. We buy very few yearlings these days, but buying weanlings and raising them up. So you saw Dennis O'Neill buy a colt by Alpha from us yesterday, and that'll go to Doug, and hopefully you'll see him debut in Saratoga, as Doug has a string with us in New York now. So yeah, we're committed to the New York bred program. We're committed to racing in New York, and it's kind of been a good out for us. If things don't work out here at the sale, we know we have that backdrop.
Well,
here's a trivia question for you.
Yeah.
And I have to call Darley to find out, where is Alpha these days?
Ooh, what did they tell you?
Is in a country is hit hard by COVID-19 as the United States. It's in Brazil.
He's
in Brazil. So, anyway, but that's a really nice colt that Dennis bought, and a big muscular son. I think hopefully we'll be seeing him blast out of there in 5 furlongs in Saratoga this summer.
Joe, touch on the first crop stallions as well. You sold an exaggerator, bless you, an exaggerator yesterday to Antonio Sano. Some thoughts about, you know, who impressed you at the Breeze Show among the new two-year-old sires?
Well, I won't be saying anything out of the ordinary. I know not this time. Really impressed a lot of people, and I think Air Force Blue also had a good Breeze Show. Those would be two, and I think Exaggerator, he was interesting in that you wouldn't think they would breeze very well, right? Not with his running style, not with his body type. You know, you would have thought he'd have been, you know, it might take him a little while to get ready. But we had two that breezed quite nicely. We weren't displeased with them, and they're nice looking. And, you know, he seems to be representing himself very well here.
I'm looking at your breezes. You only had one, Joe, I think, right? Only had one that breezed a quarter, the Cross Traffic Filly. Explain to people what the difference is and why in some cases you breeze a quarter and others you just breeze the eighth.
Well, it's funny. For many, many years, we always breezed quarters when everyone else was breezing eighths. I think my partner and I have gotten a little conservative as we've gotten older. And what's happened in this market is there's been so much focus on the gallop out times that a lot of the consigners really focus on the eighth of a mile breezes just because they want the gallop out to be impressive. What you don't see on the video, if you're not down here, are the dozens of people sitting sitting in the first turn with hats on and sitting in beach chairs, taking gallop out times, listening for noises, watching action. And for horses that sell well, that's really where the whole game is played. And so many of us have kind of focused now on eighth of a mile breezes just so the horses look impressive when it passed that kind of rogues gallery of thoroughbred agents. And, you know, I don't know if that's a good trend or not. I kind of like it by this time of year. You should be working at least a quarter, you know. But we had a lot of our horses had extremely impressive gallop outs. The Broken Vow, the Alpha that I mentioned. We have a Temple City coming and a Uncle Mo. Those two horses on day four both had great gallop outs. So, you know, it's kind of like the game within the game. And making sure that you're putting your right foot forward, you know. In my heart of hearts, I'd love to go a quarter, but I know, you know, you got to play to the buyer sometime.
No, and you know, the flashy, you know, the flashy, you know, 10 flats and ticks under 10, that Uncle Mo out of Great Attraction, the filly, she'll go on the fourth day tied for, you know, one of the fastest eighths of the whole sessions.
Yes, she had a bullet on the last day, and she's really come along. She's really a quick filly, and you know, obviously Uncle Mo's been you know, a very representative sire. So we're excited. We'll see what she does.
And Joe, for the guys that and gals that are wandering the sales grounds, people that are, you know, listening back in New York to, you know, want to get orders fulfilled, tell us a little bit more about that Constitution filly. She R&A'd for $79,000. Can she be had for that this morning?
She can be had for that and maybe even a little less. We're open for business. Come on back and look at her. You know, she's Constitution. There's not many hotter sires than that. She's a New York bred filly. She's lovely to look at. Her gallop out was much better than her breeze. Here in Barn 13, open for bids. You know, we're here to sell.
You're not there for the weather or the cuisine. And then, Joe, who's a...
going after the Ocala cuisine, Steve? Come on.
Tommy took us to a joint that took me and Hammerly and Aaron Yagoda last year to a roadhouse I think we were all fortunate, particularly Aaron and I, were fortunate to get out of there in one piece.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, I have a general life rule, which is don't eat at chain restaurants, and
yeah,
that's extremely hard to stick to here in Ocala.
This is not a chain. Ask Ventura about this joint. It's about a 10-minute drive away from downtown. From downtown, such as it is, who's the sleeper the next 3 days for you in this group? You know, who deserves a look that people might not think to immediately?
Yeah, this is one I've been a little surprised. I have a Cantheras colt, hip 1139, who breeds 10-1, and I got to be honest. There's two. I'm going to give you that one, 1139, a Cantheras colt who breeds 10-1, and a cross traffic, the one you actually just mentioned, who went 21-2. Okay, she's the sister of a horse we sold here for $350,000 a couple of years ago, named Azarel, who is with Chad Brown. I think it sounds like Chad left her with another trainer in Florida, but she broke her maiden and then ran, you know, I don't know, maybe a little bit of an ambitious race, and non-winners won, went to the lead way too quickly. But looks like a quality allowance sort of horse. And this sister went 21-2, and I think those two horses are ones, if you're looking for some value, you should be on.
Outstanding. Well, Joe Applebaum, I appreciate it. And back in New York, a great first 5 days to get the racing. If you put your NYFA hat on for a second, take off the hook. Everything got off to a, knock on wood, good start.
Yeah, I thought I was going to escape without having to talk about, you know, LASIX or takeout or COVID or anything like that. But, yeah, it was amazing. $75 million in handle. The first 5 days, I think it showed kind of what racing could be, right? What racing should be, if we're all smart about matching supply of races and racetracks with demand from our customers. And you know, it was first off, kudos to everyone, be it NYRA or our grooms and hot walkers, our trainers, all the other organizations, my own NYFA, and the chaplaincy, and Best, and whatever. Kudos for getting us there. Kudos for everyone following through on the protocols. I think you can see really great compliance when you watch the broadcast. I thought the Fox broadcast is, they're really getting better as they gain experience. And, you know, it was just great to see us put our foot forward. Even though we had a little weather, we had some technical difficulties, it really, you know, it was really great. And I think it serves as a model of what racing should really look like.
Well, we pick up again tomorrow, drawing today's Saturday card. Got the text from the racing office a little bit ago. Entries are being taken. Joe, best of luck the rest of the way. Really appreciate the live look.
Steve, our pleasure. Always good to check in with you.
Joe Applebaum, everybody, off the hook, and go talk to him about that Constitution. You know, be you know. You can be aggressive, but right? But be reasonable. Yeah. Be fair.
Exactly. That's okay. Just make an offer. That's what we're here for.
No reasonable offer will be refused.
You know, we never get insulted. It's just money. So nothing to get insulted about.
I love it. Joe Applebaum, everybody. And you can follow Joe on Twitter, too. And Joe's got a funny, he's got a funny handle. I gotta think about this for a second. He's got an unusual. I'm gonna have to try to pull it up. Let me see. Yeah, I'm gonna have to look it up. I forget the Joe's. Yeah, it's not something involving his name. It's. I don't know, something funky. I'll find them. Meanwhile, we're going to stay right here because I promised more conversation about the weekend and the qualifiers for NHC, and we'll talk to Lauren Weiss in a little bit. But I'm really happy to have Eric Gilotta join us, and the second seat knocked out by Eric. Eric, good morning.
Hey, hi, Steve. How you doing?
I'm terrific. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me on. This was a big surprise to me today.
Well, it's, you know, just fun. We want to really profile players and contestants and qualifiers. And, you know, you made short work of it this year to get both of these qualifiers, both of your chairs done.
I know. It's unbelievable. With the virus, you know, with that all and the Fawner Park thing, I really you know, found some good tracks. I was really well, you know, I played really well with Will Rogers and Fawner on the qualifiers, you know. Because I don't buy in. The only way I get in is I got to win them $18 ones or I don't play, you know. So I play like two or three of them a week. If I get in, then I get to play the weekend, you know.
Oh, that's tremendous. And that how long has that been your approach? Did you come to that after a certain, you know, certain point?
That's just the way it's always been with me. You know, I don't, you know, not, you know, I don't really have the funds to, you know, to, you know, just to kind of muscle people around, kind of, I would say, like in a poker table, you know, like, but you know, but that's the way, you know, I've I've got a lot better over the years. I've been lucky, I guess, a few times, and then, you know, and just finally this year it really came together. You know, so it's been going real well. I mean, I even won the one I got in this week. I'm in one for Friday now. So, you know, for the points thing, now I got to look at that maybe as an angle. Like, I never thought I'd ever even have a chance, you know, to play for points or anything because I don't get to play in, you know, enough tournaments. But now this year I got four scores or whatever, you know, so now I can go for my, you know, keep going and see how it goes.
And basically, you know, basically you're talking about the tour and you know, being in a position. They say that, you know, once you start hot in a season and, you know, you realize where you are, that it becomes irresistible to keep accruing, you know, points and trying to, you know, add to the, you know, potential winnings.
Yeah, definitely. And I just missed the BC one this year too. I mean, I was like one spot off, but and that would have been really good too. So I mean, it's been, you know, it's just been unbelievable. I don't know, luck, whatever you want to call it, or just experience, you know, over the years. Because I don't have no experience on the backside or anything like that. I grew up with harness racing, going to the meadows once a week with my parents or with my uncle or my brother, and then, you know, finally got into thoroughbreds like 12, 13 years ago. And really the first year I got into thoroughbreds, I qualified with NHCQualify.com way back in like 2007. And then I was out of the game for a few years, and now I've been back in it the last 5 or 6, and I've made it like 4 out of 6 years now, I think, since I've been back into it.
That's a terrific record, and thanks for the background too, because I was going to ask you about, you know, your history and how you got involved. We'll talk about, you know, your style of play in a minute, but, you know, the 412, I realized, you know, you were Pittsburgh area, so the harness side makes sense.
Yeah, well, you know, Pittsburgh, there's only a few of us that play around here. You know, Ed Reedy, he's from Pittsburgh, and then Rich Pozolowski, he did real well in the Breeders, I think, last year. And there's a couple other guys playing now, I think. It would be nice if they'd put up the, like, NHC Qualify used to put where they were from next to their name, you know, that was always nice. But anyway, yeah, it's been a great year, Steve.
Talk about the weekend too, and I love the fact that you got your first seat during, you know, pandemic racing, when Fonner and Will Rogers were dominating the conversation. Talk about the two different successes.
Well, you know, actually the first seat I won, that's the first they did an Australia qualifier, and I won something that they, so I had money in my account, so I just fired, there was like 30-some people playing an Australia one. I won the feeder for that, got into the 165 on Saturday, and then I won the seat there. So I actually won on a Friday night Australia qualifier, the first seat. And I've never played Australia in my life, so that was just, you know, unbelievable. Like, that, you know, I think I won a $12 money tournament or something that week, so I have cash in my, you know, every year I don't always have cash in my account, Steve, so it's like this year it's been going pretty good. I haven't had to reach too far, so.
I love it. That's great. And, you know, what's nice about this, it's encouraging. I mean, we have three qualifiers from the weekend in the free contest, but the free contest is very hard. I mean, 1,400 people on Saturday. To hear this, and, you know, we talked to so many different players that do it this way, that, you know, they don't want to spend, you know, not that the buy-in is, you know, outrageous, but this is an example that you can play your way in for small money, and it should really encourage people that, you know, that think, oh, I've got to spend $180, $165, or $500 buy-ins. I you don't have to at all. You can do exactly what Eric's done.
Yeah, yes, it can happen. I mean, it really. I've been fortunate enough to play in some you know, make it to some big tournaments, but I haven't been able to, you know, get successful when I get there. So hopefully now a little more experience out in Vegas, two entries, maybe this year will be the year. I always remember Gary Johnson. He would show up the Meadows, him and the McIntyre sometimes, and they would see me down there on their way home from, like, Laurel Park or playing somewhere on Saturday, and they would stop the Meadows on Sunday, and I would see him there, and he said, oh, it'll all come together one day. You know, he just said, it'll come together for you one day, and you'll just be like, all of a sudden you'll have, you know, you'll hit one. So maybe, I always have that in my mind, you know. You know, Gary, the trainer, now he's back to training. He don't really play much tournaments now, but.
Well, and there's a number of horsemen that, you know, that have done well and have qualified. And almost every year there's at least a couple of them. Talk about your style of play and your approach, you know, in terms of PPs and the like.
Well, I use speed. You know, I play a lot of speed horses. I know that don't always go well. But if you play a pick and pray and then the speed's not there that day, then you're but, you know, like on Friday, I actually did my picks at work for that because I thought I was going to be off that day, and then I had to go in, and I actually did my picks. I'm a guard at the courthouse. I actually have my computer right on the machine. That's where I did my picks that day, and that's pretty amazing. No, I didn't, you know, but I just looked at the speed and pace figures, and I went off of that and took, you know, and it, look for prices that look like horses that could be out on front and maybe steal a race, or, you know, be right, you know, or, you know, be right there to stalk or
sure.
Whatever. And that's basically what happened. I mean, two of them, you know, two of the prices were right on the front end. And then, the one did close, though. That was a first-time starter. I think it was a Belmont race. Mott's horse.
Oh,
which I couldn't believe was 20-1 at number 6. I couldn't on Friday. I don't know if it was a first time starter or second time. I couldn't believe he went off at 20-1 though. That was a little figuring a Mott horse at 20-1 he was. I didn't think he was gonna run though.
That was, we talked about that yesterday with Andy. That was that lost ticket.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, that was one of my. I was one of the horses there too that hit that day.
Well done. That was a nutty price. There's no. Andy specifically
it's a lot
talked
more
about it.
Hit that race like that too. That's where my voice is still. I still have a sore throat from me on for that one coming to get in the wire.
When it comes to identifying speed, I mean, strictly PPs. Do you use anything else? Any figs?
PPs, I use the equal-based figures, too. I mean, I don't pay for anything. I mean,
good for you. Good for you.
Or the race lens, you know, for a year there. The only thing about that, everybody who qualified had that. So I kind of like, I would notice, you know, a horse that, you know, looked good. And like 31 guys out of 97 would have it, and so I just kind of put my own thing together with using, like, you know, off of Equibase or whatever, right on the website where you bet at stuff. You know, off
very
of
nice.
Figures,
so. How about that? Keeping it very simple. You referenced the courthouse. What do you do for work?
I'm a guard at the courthouse. Like when you come in and. You know,
sure.
You run your stuff like the airport. You know, you put your stuff in there and run it through the metal detector. Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, not all the jobs are that, but that's where I was Friday when I actually, we were kind of slow because we just opened back up and they're only letting so many people in. So I was able to have my computer right there behind the screen. It's funny because the guys like with me were looking, they're telling me to play and stuff, you know, they don't know anything about it, and they're like standing behind me, hey, take this horse, you know, like that. I sent them the picture of, like, but they don't realize how big it is. That's the thing, like, especially in Pittsburgh, there's not a lot of thoroughbred players, so it's really like people, like, they don't know how hard it is to make it, and it's, you know, it's just different, you know.
Sure.
So, but yeah, I mean, you know, one of the guys that showed me, Al Goldblick, he was a former trainer down in Florida, and he listens to you every day. He's back up in Pittsburgh now and works up here. He's the one that's really showed me the ins and outs of any question I've ever had for 13 years, a good friend of mine. He answers. He always has the answer. Really sharp guy. He plays a little bit of tournaments, not many, but we go away together and play. We'll go up to Penn National and then when he's there, he'll ride me in that and play, and he'll be able to go with me to Vegas and that kind of be like a, you know, I can reach to him for some information. He's always
sure.
He's always good for a horse or two. So, but yeah, I just want to, you know, give him a lot of thanks for keeping me in the game this long.
I love it. It's tremendous. How, if you don't mind my asking, how old are you?
51.
Nice. So you got plenty of time yet, and you're still learning and still adding to the arsenal. That's tremendous. And I was going to ask you too about how many times a season you'll go for an on-site for an on-site contest. So when that does happen, you do go.
Yeah, well, I won last year. I won the Hawthorne, so we went out to Hawthorne. That was nice. I got to play because it was like you won a Friday entry and a Saturday. So Al and I went out to Chicago. That was nice. And then we go to Penn National usually.
Sure.
They actually drove me out there last year, and I got really sick, and I couldn't play. We had to drive me home. I felt horrible. Yeah, I had like some stomach, like I had to go to the hospital and everything. So that really was a, you know, because I don't get to play that much. And then to put it all together and work it out and get all the way out there, and it was just horrible, horrible day. Yeesh. But now to come back this year with this has been unbelievable.
Unbelievable is right. It's not the year's not half over, and you got both tickets, and you got an angle to get involved and stay on when it comes to the tour points as well. And it's obvious that you enjoy it tremendously. That's clearly evident just by listening to you.
And Steve, I just feel so fortunate enough that I've learned this game. I mean, to me, I just feel like people are missing out. I mean. And then be able, you know, everybody was complaining about those sports and all that, and I was in heaven during the during this everybody lockdown or whatever you want to call it. I mean, and you know, then our racing getting all this publicity on the Fox and NBC Sports, and you know, because you did have different people asking you about it at work and stuff because they know, you know, I guess they're flicking through or whatever on Saturday
sure.
and seeing racing, you know, so it was nice. I mean. To get, you know, something so bad helped our sport a little bit, I think. But, you know, I'm just so fortunate enough to be, I love this game. And I'm, you know, I don't know why I was picked to get into horse racing. I always liked it since I was a kid. Even at the Meadows, Roger Houston calling races, I wanted a competition when I was like 12 years old announcing the races. So I was going to be able to get to announce the race. And to this day, I was only 12, I was so young, and I guess the pressure got to me, and I couldn't do it, and I, like, ran out of the track, like, and I never
went
down. It's like, so, like, it was just this, like, crazy, like, you know, but I've always, you know, I've been a track rat my whole life, Steve, getting the forms out of the garbage, selling them when I was a kid down there at night and stuff, picking up tickets, running them through the machine, hoping you get winners, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. So the track, you know, I got a chance, you know, to make it all come, you know, so hopefully this year.
Well, you certainly, you know, you'll have two shots at it when we get to February and we get to Vegas, and it's a good thing Vegas. It's a good thing we've got 6-7 months. Vegas can work out their kinks when it comes to the protocols out there. Hopefully by February, everything is really back to normal and comfortable. Eric, I'm thrilled for you and continued success. And look forward to, you know, seeing you, even if it's not until February.
Well, Steve, I can't wait, and I'll definitely say hi when I'm out there. If anything, you got my number now. Give me a call, and really, thanks for everything you do for the game, Steve. You don't get enough credit.
I appreciate that. Eric Gilotta coming to us from Pittsburgh. If you've got business at the Allegheny County Courthouse, is that the courthouse you're at? You at the big
yep,
one?
Yep, exactly. Allegheny County Courthouse. Yep. Any of the courthouses.
Unbelievable.
Down there.
Too funny. I love it. Eric Gilotta, well done, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, Steve. Thanks for having me, bud.
Not at all. What a fun visit. And Eric with two qualifiers. And what's more inspiring than that? Using the qualifying method to go from, midweek and get to the weekend, and he's converted two of them, including playing Australia. That's so great. Let's take a timeout. It's the top of the hour. We'll get Sid in here. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch. Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. Later in this half hour, a little bit more contest conversation. Lorne Weiss and his son Andrew. And they're just like Eric and Al, they're playing partners. And Andrew is going to turn 21 and join the tour next week, it looks like. 2 weeks, maybe. And I've seen him grow up a little bit. I would say over the last, I don't know, 6-7 years. It's pretty funny. Sid Fernando, though, next. Mike Welsh at top of hour three with this big midweek allowance race that is going to send some horses variety of places. We'll get Mike's. I'm not going to even speculate on Etay and Dien and Sol Volante, the B and Cone runners, and more. Back after this at the races, Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Dolly America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow. What other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.